All right, so we are trying to get results in for Ohio 12th. It is a kind of suburban, rural district that is having a special election for a House seat, for a U.S. House seat. There are kind of two... How did our legal advisor describe him? He described him as a centrist Republican and a centrist Democrat.
It's Joe Johnson and John...
You say, were you trying to say Joe Johnson and John... Oh, Joson?
Yeah, that yeah. That's why it doesn't work. Jack Johnson and John Jackson.
Yeah, there you go. That's about it. I think it's Balderson is the Republican and O'Connor is the Democrat. So that's a classic...
bland Ohio names.
Kind of, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, we're trying to get in results before we finish recording. What I was going to say, though, is like, yeah, so when I was looking this up just now, as I was saying to you, on Cincinnati.com, they had a headline that was like, Ohio 12th, does this, is it a red wave or a blue wave coming to the Midwest? And but most of the polls going into the election today had it as a toss-up. So, you know, whoever wins, you know, yeah, it's like they're going to be a representative for a few months until the general. And then they'll be the incumbent, though, of course. And but, like, a toss-up election, like, if, you know, the Republican wins by 2 points or the Democrat wins by 2 points, that's not really, like, that in and of itself doesn't represent a lot for predicting the wave. What matters is how that went against traditional, like, the 2016 results in that district, or how it fits in with the broader kind of how Democrats are doing above expectations in these special elections.
Well, and you can't just use, like, one data point to, you know, label a trend. Even a line needs two data points. To look at this, you'd have to go back to at least a decade and see how the district usually votes.
Well, yeah, and so, so like what they do for, so like what would matter here is if you would, so you'd look at the past few elections there, right, and you'd get an idea of the common breakdown, and then you look, okay, how is this election on a purely partisan level different than that kind of baseline, and so if, like, I think it was something like in 2016, Trump won there by, it was like 12, and Romney won there by like, I don't know, 11 or something.
Yeah, southwestern Ohio is a pretty solidly conservative part of the country.
So if it's a toss-up, so let's say even the Democrat loses by one, right? That would still mean that's 10 points better than Hillary or Obama did there in the past two, at least presidential elections. And this is assuming the House elections those 2 years were similar to the presidential breakdown. I don't know why they do that. I think they just do that because people have a baseline for Obama, Romney, Trump, Clinton. Because really we should, and I think they do this in the good models, they compare it to past House elections there, not presidential. Although maybe they do some presidential too, I don't know. Anyway,
it's really hyper-partisan to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's... Well, that's what I was okay, so that's the point I was going to get to, is that, like, the partisan team-winning thing that's going on. I mean, yes, only one person can win an election, only one person can hold that seat and actually cast those votes as a representative. So it is kind of like, you know, it is a winner-take-all. But when you're talking about it, using it as a predictive and part of a trend, part of a line, to talk about future elections, which is what that headline was implying, it becomes like a, like they're viewing it like a sports game, where it's like, you know, it's all or nothing. You just gotta win. Winning is everything, and that may be fine for the election in and of itself. But when you're trying to extrapolate information, that the actual winner, like, doesn't really matter. It's the breakdown. It's the percentages.
Yeah, those things that generate statistics, like how they vote.
And by the way, actual sports is kind of like this too. Like, like Vegas, when it predicts future games, it's not merely looking at win-loss records, right? It's looking at how people did against previous spreads. So it's how they perform against expectations. And, wait, so yeah.
Do they base that on their salary for new players?
Mm-mm. No, no, no. The spread is just...
Well, yeah, but like a rookie who makes like, you know, like $11 million a year contract because he's the hot ticket, would that influence Vegas' spread?
His contract would have nothing to do with it. It would just be, so like this is a little harder to do in football because like football has such big teams, right? But let's say, you know, like the Bears right now traded for Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or something like that, right? It really wouldn't matter how much he gets paid. It would matter that they just acquired a talented new player. And then, yes, Vegas, at least for that first game, would try and predict just how much that individual player matters. But you also, like, because most of your team is the same from year to year. Like, there's always turnover, but most of it's the same. And so that's where, like, the trends come in.
And that's the coaching ability.
Well, coaches change too, though.
No, we haven't had a coach change in a decade. Well, the
Packers coaches don't change. But other teams' coaches change all the time.
Sure. Which is why we kind of have the same kind of, you know, our players develop the same set of skills. And to bring this back to politics, these politicians keep rehashing the same rhetorical points and, you know, develop the same skill set by party in a general way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and there are candidates that the candidate in, so like I have not heard anyone say that like this O'Connor is like an amazing candidate or a terrible candidate, and same for the Balderson. They're like both like politically centrist and they're both like fine, right?
Sure.
But like you can have a candidate that, so like a lot of the hot takes about like the Doug Jones Roy Moore thing was like trying to deflate it being a data point for a predictive blue wave by saying how Roy Moore was such a terrible candidate. And that I don't really know enough to exactly comment on whether or not it's predictive of a blue wave and whether that is a correct in and of itself judgment, but it's a good example of like a bad candidate could drag down an otherwise partisan, like predictive partisan breakdown because they're just so shitty.
And Alabama's kind of like the perfect counterpoint for that, right?
Well, I mean, Alabama should always be going red for statewide elections.
Know, well, to my mind, it shouldn't have been nearly so close as it was. Like, yeah. if they had had somebody with more, shall we say, broader appeal than Doug Jones, then perhaps they would have won the election. Perhaps it would have been more indicative of a wave rather than an indictment on the Democrat Party's inability to politic at the street level.
But the obvious counterpoint to what you're saying is, like you can say that about Doug Jones, that maybe Doug Jones, it shouldn't have been as close as it was, but like Alabama is full of crazy conservatives who genuinely think that it is actually more evil to support abortion than it is to rape little girls. They actually think that. A large section of their electorate thinks that.
Well, at least 12% wrote in Luther Strange, so some of them might have conviction.
And that's just my point, is that there's multiple factors at work. That's my only point with Alabama.
This conversation's gotten sidetracked.
What about sports now? What were we talking about? Brewers? Giants?
What was up 21-5 the other night? Yeah, we'll talk about that later in closing thoughts.
I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about 21-5. Like, what about the day after that when they had a walk-off home run? That was way better. So, I don't know. That's it with Ohio. I'm going to keep checking updates as we get into the Wisconsin primaries, which are next Tuesday, right? The 15th?
Yeah, 14th.
Yep. All right. So, where do you want to start? Which race?
Well, should we start with the Senate race?
Sure. Yeah. Who's
I've seen a couple of Tammy Baldwin signs.
Yeah. Well, and she's not. She doesn't have a significant primary challenger, if any primary challenger. I'm not sure.
No, I don't think she has any. Nobody primaries Tammy Baldwin. But you're gonna try to come at her from the left. I mean, there are things that she's done that I disagree with, but it would be difficult to find room to the left of the first LGBTQ person in the Senate and in the House.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And actually, I would say there's even so a lot of what people who are in the center or right don't like. Well, mostly center is what is important for what I'm about to say. Don't like about far left politics is like the rabble rousing nature of it. Like that just it makes some people uncomfortable. You know, like freaking out the squares type thing.
Protestants.
And she just does not have that demeanor. Like her politics are fairly liberal. I'm sure you could elaborate if you wanted to on things here and there that aren't. I think she's very careful and selective about not being liberal on certain issues, though.
Yeah, well, she didn't vote for Wilbur Ross, which is better than a lot of her colleagues.
There you go. But anyway, so I think she's even hard to take on from the center as well, is all it.
Yeah. I would agree with that. But yeah, her opposition in the Republican side is kind of crazy. I mean, Leah Vuckmeer and Kevin Nicholson have been going at it pretty intently throughout the primary season. What did Vuckmeer say about Baldwin?
Because she voted against Gina Haspel for is this what you're referring to?
Yeah, that one.
She voted against because Baldwin voted against Gina Haspel for head of the CIA. So she put out this campaign literature with like a picture of her next to
was it Bin Laden?
It wasn't Bin Laden, but it was like I don't think it was Bin Laden. It was one of the other ones though. Like who was the guy who was number two there? I'm terrible with these names.
Wait, at the CIA?
No, in Al-Qaeda.
Oh, Zawahiri. Ayman al-Zawahiri.
I think that might be it, but you can look it up.
That was in May. No, it was Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Oh, okay.
It's got Vuckmeer and Gina Haspel in one corner under Team America versus Team Terrorists, which is Sammy Baldwin and that money shot of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in his nightgown that they love using.
Jesus Christ.
And this was in May. It feels like that was like years ago.
Yeah.
Man, where does this summer going?
I picture she learned a little bit of a lesson because I haven't seen. Well, actually, it's probably more that she's just more worried about Nicholson, really.
I mean, she's not getting any softer on any of her positions.
You mean Vuckmeer?
Yeah, Vuckmeer and Nicholson are trying to outright each other.
Oh, I agree. I guess what I'm just saying is that it feels like they're not doing as outrageous of anti-Tammy stunts. Like, I would call that a stunt.
Yeah.
Or just really stupid. Someone in the campaign just dumb. I mean, it's either done to, like, be trolly and get attention, or it's just in poor taste. I don't know.
I mean, she had to have seen it. Somebody approved that. More than one person approved that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And we've talked about Nicholson. In fact, we talked about him in, I think, our second episode. Second or third, when we talked about America's PAC, which we've done a couple times now. The one funded by Uline, who I think has pretty much funded his entire campaign. I don't think he's really getting a lot of much money elsewhere. Even Kevin Nicholson's parents, famously, are Democrats that gave the maximum amount each to Tammy Baldwin's campaign. Like, when your parents are like, no, I don't want you in the Senate, you're fucking nuts.
And both of us don't want you. I was like, wow.
Yeah. And by the way, it's hard to find a liberal old white man in Wisconsin nowadays. So good on him. Mm. Like, even when his son is running as a Republican, he's giving money to Tammy Baldwin. That's, hey, man.
They exist out there. They're not quite as rare as that would suggest,
statistically, it's rare. I'm not saying it's like one in a thousand, but it's pretty rare. I mean, shit, you and I are rare. Like, even.
Yeah, we're both college educated. That means we're almost certainly liberal.
I'm not sure if the college educated overcomes the white male, even. I think it's closer to 50%, but I thought I've seen numbers where we're still in a minority.
I mean, me being a veteran, like, it takes me even to go further. Weirdness, because veterans are even further right.
Well, it's one of those things where if you keep like adding like data points, you're eventually going to get to like, yes, I am the only me.
I suppose.
Like, it's like, I think if you probably like, if they were polling, you know, specifically atheists, for example, that might push me into a little bit less rare. But that's just the whole point, is that like you have to like add these things. I don't know, it doesn't really matter. I don't care. Yeah. That most white men in my state are Trumpers.
Hate America?
Hmm?
Hate America?
I don't know. They just really like Donald fucking Trump. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It's why we do this 2-hour weekly therapy for me to get this.
Thanks for listening, especially everybody in Germany.
I can't take it. Okay. That's the Senate thing. Tammy is still the favorite. There's been a ton of money NPR reported this past week. I would love to see a stat on the most money per capita, like not being spent by the capita of the state, but being spent to get the votes of the capita of that state.
Mm,
like, I wonder if Wisconsin has number one.
The dollar per vote ratio.
Like, there's tons of money coming in from out of state for the Republican primary people, because, like, even though McConnell and the Senate leadership pack or whatever they call it aren't yet involved in this race, there's still a lot of money coming in to take out Baldwin, who, by the way, going back to Haspel, her voting against Haspel and Ross, right?
Mm-hmm.
I listen to politics shit a lot, and all you hear about, whenever those things come up, Senate confirmations, I always hear about Manchin, Heidekamp, the dude in Indiana, who, you know, the red state Democrat senator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tammy is one of them. She never gets brought up as, oh, I don't know if I, like, she just voted against she knows she's not going to turn anyone over to her side by voting for Gina Haspel.
She's been in representing Wisconsin since before we turned into a purple state, though.
Yes. I mean, but I still maintain that she, like, she understands that voting for just your conscience, just what you think that, God, even taking morals out of it, just like what you think is the best use of your vote isn't going to lose you a bunch of, like, people on the fence. Like, that's not what people are casting, most people are casting their votes in November for. They're not thinking back to who voted for Wilbur Ross or who didn't.
I mean, honestly, it should help them, you know, figure out who they're voting for if they think, oh, this person will vote in such, or what, or vote how they feel is right for, you know, Wisconsin and America.
I think it's more likely to, if you vote the way kind of your party and your own heart and mind believes you should vote, you're more likely to maintain your base than if you do the opposite, then convert independents or swing voters.
Sure.
I think that's a pipe dream that doesn't really exist, but you can lose your base. Like, if we were sitting here talking about Tammy Baldwin and she was like one of those other Democrats that you know,
voted for all intents and purposes caucuses with the Republicans.
Yeah, if she was one of them, I'd like. I mean, yeah, I guess I'd vote for her over Kevin Nicholson, but I wouldn't have any passion, or I wouldn't ever bring it up to another person. Like, hey, make sure you vote for Tammy. Like, she's good people. I wouldn't do that.
Well, speaking of her other opposition, Griffin Jones.
Yeah, tell me about Griffin Jones. You found him today.
WisconsinVote.org, a service of Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio, has biographies and statements. Oh, this is from the candidate's website, but they have biographies from the candidates where they're available. And this Griffin Jones guy, his is perhaps the strangest. He spends, let me count the paragraphs, like what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 paragraphs trying to make people feel like he is one of them. Like the third paragraph is just a statement, all in caps, I am one of you. You know me, look in the mirror, I'm a guy like you, I'm your brother or dad or grandpa, the guy you see at church or sitting across from you at the bar. I'm getting married to a gal like you or your mom or grandma.
Oh, God.
I guess I didn't read this close enough to pick that statement out before, but yeah.
Yeah, what's with all the grandma and grandpa stuff? Like, he's not that old, right?
No, this guy's like probably about our age, I would bet.
He's playing up that he's like, hey, if like you're watching TV and they showed a shot of the crowd at a Packer game, I'm the type of guy you'd see.
Yeah, that the Packers come after this statement though.
Okay.
Like immediately after. But when I say I'm a Wisconsinite, when I say that the soul of the Wisconsinite flows through my blood and is in my bones, God. You know exactly what I mean.
Yeah. Ugh, yucky coded language there.
Yeah, and there's, like, not a single bit of policy in this entire yes. biography.
That was actually the first thing I noticed. It actually, I had to sort of, like, double back to kind of pick up on like, I was like, well, wait, why is this funny beyond just he seems like the worst candidate for a public office ever? but then I got, like, that picked up on, like, the, I don't know, sort of ucky racism, just sort of like a racism thing going on.
And this weird, subtle racism thing and just a generally... I guess alarming vacuity to it.
Like who runs for like I've even seen like even like crazy like people who like go in costume and like try and like you know like they're like you only see them on like the free airtime on like cable access when they're running for like some weird office. Like those people usually have policy stances. they may not be reasonable or rational ones, but they have policy stances. This guy didn't seem to have that even. But he talked about his identity a hell of a lot.
Huh. Yeah, it's weird coded racism. But yeah, other than there's also another guy who's on Charles Barman? Yeah, who has literally no information about him, and George Lucia, but who also has no information.
Okay.
But yeah.
Why do people run then? Why are they doing that?
I don't know. I mean, is it just they don't know what they're getting into, or it's
yeah that could
I don't know, maybe some slight hint of fame. I mean, they're going to be put in front of everybody in Wisconsin. Well, everybody who votes, which should be everybody in Wisconsin.
Vote next week. That's why we're doing our episode to release within a week of the yes, everyone vote. I kind of get when people run for like local office and like a mayor thing, and they're like a ridiculous mayoral candidate. Like I know the stand up in Madison that did that, and I don't really know exactly. I never asked him why he did it, but
attention.
Yeah, it seems like it's more like material. I mean, for him, very literally, because he's a stand-up, but it's like something you could put in, like, articles. Like, I don't think you get that much direct media exposure for it, but it's like you can constantly bring up, like, throughout the rest of your career, like former mayoral candidate. It's just like an interesting thing. But I think you might be right, like naivete about like, hey, I want to be involved in politics. I don't like Tammy Baldwin. I'm going to run for the Republican nomination for the Senate. And then like you file some paperwork and that took you like 2 months to figure out. And then you're now like on the ballot and you have no idea what you're doing. You have no money to hire anyone.
Yeah, but you're on the ballot.
And, you know, hey, you might get, I don't know. Driving around the state this last weekend, saw a fair amount of Vukmir signs.
I only know of like one Tammy Baldwin sign in my area.
I think I might get a Tammy before the general. Not that, yeah. I don't know. There's like maybe two Republicans in my neighborhood, just guessing by signs I see around elections and stuff, so I don't know. If you're a Republican in Madison, you're like, you're not about to be persuaded otherwise.
Yeah, and you're not, but you're going to put a sign out either.
Well, sometimes, I mean, no, they put signs. There'll be signs. I don't think that they're worried about like, maybe like downtown. You might not do it downtown. But I think out in the residential neighborhoods, I don't think people like would do anything to your house or property. Or
anything. I mean, nothing like that, but just the public shame of it.
Oh, yeah. No, I think they build up such a defense against it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's talk about the governor election. Scott Walker, blah, 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 is running, obviously, for re-election. And he has a huge war chest. He's going against a number of Democrats. I wanted to get your thoughts on a few of these people, Charles, to help me make a decision. I want you to tell me what to think about these candidates. Are any of the ones I'm gonna? We've kind of mentioned Paul Soglin, who is the current mayor of Madison, on the pod before. So let's take him out of this discussion. I'm not prepared to vote for Paul Soglin. I don't want to. I don't think he's run a. I don't think he's put any. He hasn't made me think he even wants to be governor.
No.
So like, I don't even need to look at his policies. Because I actually was reading when I was reading about some of the candidates over the week. I did read his thing, his questionnaire he did for one of the sites, and I liked his answers a lot, to be honest. But it's like. Sure. I also know that he has not tried to campaign at all, so it's like, if you don't want the job, why am I hiring you?
Right.
So let's take him out.
Okay.
Are any of these people, do any of them have a glaring weakness?
Let's see.
And you could talk about your feelings, not like some sort of like hypothetical, like what other people should think. I mean, you, like what you think is a glaring weakness.
Well, Kathleen Vinehout is way too comfortable with people's right to own weapons than a typical Democrat would be in this day and age, especially in the wake of, you know, Parkland and any other number of shootings that we've had. So I'd like to discount her.
I'm going to add about her, not to complicate, just because I find it interesting. This questionnaire I was reading, I think it was on, it's called like Vote 411. Or maybe it was the Wisconsin Shoes. It was one of the two. But they asked a gun question, and I actually, like, her answer, because, you know, she's running in the Democratic primary, right? That's what she's doing right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, her answer did not say, like, I have long supported gun rights, and even though, like, that is a thing about her that I am aware of, she gave a couple actually very practical, real-world, specific examples of it was something like the what are the things that like the dude in Vegas had?
Oh, the bump stocks.
Yeah, I think it was like that, and then it was like something like else like that, like a couple very specific things. That's like, okay, well, she's at least not a radical on the issue.
Sure.
So, but anyways, I tend to agree with you on that. Any other ones? Any other weaknesses?
Well, I don't really like Matt Flynn.
He's a attorney from Milwaukee, right?
Yeah. Navy veteran, attorney, and former chair of the Democrat Party of Wisconsin.
Yeah, so that would be disqualifying for me. Because it's like, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is in, like, tatters. I don't know when he ran it, Maybe he ran it during some sort of heyday. I don't know.
Wait, elected a Democratic governor. Would that have been, what's his name?
Doyle, probably. It's the only one. Yeah. It's the only one in my lifetime.
Yeah, so he was responsible for Doyle. So, I mean, I guess, not terrible, but...
Yeah, not nothing.
Maybe it's just my bias toward against the party establishment, because, yeah, they've, as you say, kind of lost their franchise.
I would almost put, yeah, I don't know. He hasn't held public office before, although he's obviously been involved
been in around politics.
I don't know that his resume is, like, saying to me, like, and not that resume is everything, but I don't know. I think he's one of the weakest candidates, and he is, I think, out of this group, probably the one I hear the least about. So, okay. So, yeah. Well, any others? Yeah.
Well, Tony Evers.
Yeah, okay. What's wrong with him?
He's unfortunately a front runner, but 3 terms as education or state superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand education is kind of a, of course, rightfully so, a big thing here in Wisconsin, but maybe we should look. I'm just saying, in certain parts of the state, educational outcomes aren't even where we need them to be. And admittedly, part of the reason is the state has starved its education system for money, but I don't know. His record isn't as strong as, you know, his experience would suggest, I think.
I see how you're, yeah, there's a flaw in his resume, which is, it's, you know, it's not like we're talking about some sort of golden age of Wisconsin education that he's, like, been the leader of.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, though, like, he's running a campaign against the guy who, for most of that time period, has been the governor, while he's been state superintendent. You know, and he's running against him. The main part of his platform is education, saying that guy has ruined education. He's a big reason why it needs help, why I haven't been able to do my job well. I mean, it would be nice if he could point to more specifics beyond we need to pay more money to teachers and facilities. You know, like, I don't know.
Specific proposals. And again, the reason Mike Flynn doesn't exactly work is, you know, he doesn't have any specific successes that you can attribute to his decision-making.
Yeah. I will say this, though, about Evers. One, I find him to be rhetorically fairly progressive. I was surprised reading some of his answers to things. I was shitting on old white Wisconsin men earlier, so I don't know. I guess maybe that's the context I'm viewing him through, being surprised. But I don't know. I thought his answers were pretty good, and he, I do value, though it's not the be all end all, but I do value experience within,
government service.
Yeah. I mean, and in his case, because he's talking about education a lot, you know, he comes from the education part. He was a teacher and superintendent of a district. You know, I mean, it does get you to wonder, though, about other aspects of governing. You know, someone who was in the legislature might have a more well-rounded background. But I don't know, 3 terms as state superintendent. I mean, he's been around the block. He's been thinking about these things. I don't know. Maybe it's not a huge plus, but I don't know that it's a huge negative.
I think the real fight here would be, in any normal election cycle, would be Malin Mitchell versus Kelda Royce.
Can we, before we get into those two, can you tell me about McCabe? Anything McCabe? I know he's kind of running on like an anti-cronyism, anti-corruption thing, which I do have a special place in my heart for that.
Oh, he's from Rock County, too? God damn it. I'm sorry, dude. I just don't like you.
Excuse me. Is that why you don't like him?
No, I mean, he's worked for numerous nonpartisan watchdog groups.
Mm-hmm. That seems good to me.
Right.
Yeah.
The Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. He's worked for, or as communications director and legislative liaison for the Madison School District. He worked as a legislative aide for 3 Republican members of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Okay. That's a thing. But
interesting.
It doesn't sound like he's ever had, well, government service, for instance, as we pointed out before.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in the Peace Corps, which, man, I don't know. McCabe just kind of went up a few notches, in my opinion, but...
Yeah, from what I understand, he has, like, one of the more interesting backgrounds.
But none of this suggests that he would be an effective administrator.
No, and he actually talked a lot about, in some of the stuff I was reading, or didn't talk a lot. I mean, I think getting detailed policy information is a little overblown, because I don't know how much it benefits most candidates to be super detailed about things they'll do. Although, of course, sure, you want to know that they can, if pressed, they can answer those questions, of course. But he had some of the weakest, in terms of issue by issue, it just didn't really, like, ring out to me. Even though his main message of cronyism and corruption is, like, super important to me. I mean, that's really important to me. But I don't know that...
Like, one issue candidate, even more than Tony Evers.
Yeah, I don't know that that makes him governor. I mean... So, okay. Let's talk about Kelda Royce and Malon Mitchell. Can I tell you one thing about each?
Sure.
That has nothing to do with them being governor. One, my partner is the same age as her, both from Wisconsin, both went to NYU at the same time, and had a mutual friend, but they never met.
How?
Or at least they don't, you know, my partner doesn't remember meeting her, at least, and she's like, I don't think I ever met that person. but yeah, mutual friend, went to NYU at the same time, both from Wisconsin, like they would have hit it off, but they just didn't. Just ever coincidentally, fate didn't bring them together. My Malon Mitchell story is one of my most vivid memories of the Act 10 protests in Wisconsin was when I was outside having a smoke, and we were just sitting there reading as, like, all the noise and the cacophony was emanating and echoing throughout the Capitol back in those halcyon days of protesting. And I was surprised by hearing drums, and I looked down the sidewalk around the building from me, and there is a procession of firemen, and drummers, I guess. Drummer, yep. Firemen. And they have flags, and they marched in there, and it was like a big thing.
Bagpipes.
Yeah, it was super cool. And at the head of it was Tammy Baldwin, Jesse Jackson, and Malon Mitchell. And I saw that guy standing with those two at the beginning, and I'm like, that guy's going places.
And here he is.
And all of a sudden it was like, and I remember reading some quotes then after that from him about the protesting. His union was not affected by Act 10, but he made a point to try and show some solidarity with other unions, which is, I think, what kind of started him along this path that he's on now. So what should I know about Malon?
Well, he has gotten things accomplished. He's gotten at least 2 bills passed that, of course, specifically protect firemen.
Interesting.
One covers firemen in the event they acquire a communicable disease in the course of their duties, and the other covers the families and widows of and widowers of firefighters if they lose their lives in the line of duty. Like, their dependents will retain their health coverage, basically.
That's really nice. That's really, yeah.
So that's, feathers in his cap, so he's able to communicate effectively to the legislature and, you know, represent his interests in a beneficent way.
Okay.
And Kelda Royce is, wow. She's been on a ton of boards.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of the people, she got her law degree from the University of Madison. She worked for the Wisconsin Innocence Project, I think they're the people associated with
Sorry. Are you trying to say Stephen Avery?
Yeah, I think I was.
Is that Wisconsin Innocence? I can't remember. It probably is.
Anyway.
I don't know if that was the best. The Wisconsin Innocence Project. But no, but I mean, it is important beyond the kind of contentious Stephen Avery. The Wisconsin Innocence Project is a really cool program that helps get people off of, I think, life sentences, right? Isn't it mostly what they focus on? What was that?
And to get them exonerated.
Yeah, yeah. And they try and use DNA evidence to do that. They're a really great thing. I actually didn't know she was associated with that. I must have just read past it before. That's really cool.
And yeah, she was Democratic Caucus Chair in the among Democratic State Representatives during Act 10.
Ooh, okay. I didn't know that.
She's also the one who kind of went viral a little bit when she breastfed. What was it on the? Was it the assembly floor or in a campaign? Maybe both.
It was the campaign that announced your candidacy for governor.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's pretty radical. That's why my choice would either be her or Malin Mitchell, and that's a tough one. I haven't seen any signs for her, but I've seen at least a dozen or so or more Malin Mitchell signs around here in Beloit.
I've seen a few Roys. I can't say I've seen a lot of Mitchell here. In Racine, over the weekend, I saw a couple houses with lots of Mitchell signs. So good union households, I think.
Yeah, very strong data points.
But I can't say it was. But I did see them. I mean, there were interesting about Racine though, and I think this is just because for local, really small local races, the main advertising are signs, and so. The vast majority of signs I saw were for like state assembly races, sheriff, things like that. Like there weren't very many. I didn't even actually see many Bryce or who's. Why am I blanking?
We're going to go to that race next.
Yeah. I didn't see many of the other like congressional, Senate, any of that. I didn't see a lot of signs for any of that. So I don't know what that means. I wanted to say that. I am leaning towards, I'm leaning towards Roy's, but I'm really like, it's just like a slight lean right now. I don't know. I like a few of the candidates. I think I am down to Evers, Roy's, or Mitchell. I don't think McCabe has what I want in a governor, although I appreciate his focus. And, I don't know, the other people don't really seem worth talking about to me.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about. I mean, Miss Turnbull is interesting.
Who's that?
Maggie Turnbull.
I don't know who that is.
She is an astronaut herself.
Oh.
Well, maybe that's an astronomer who is leading nationwide science teams to build NASA missions.
Weird. Okay. And she's running for governor here.
Yeah, as an independent.
I don't know why I don't. Oh, okay, as an independent. I might have heard about her then, now that you're saying that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I mean, but so that's
but
not.
But that's the only interesting thing about her is that she's a fiercely independent candidate who, is kind otherwise qualified, I would say.
That would be more of a general election decision, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I just want to say that I've been thinking about all week as I've been looking at these candidates. By the way, I actually kind of like Vinehout too. I might almost throw her in just because I really appreciate that she has put effort, even though no one really, like, she didn't have to do this, into writing progressive budgets for like the past 10 years or whatever it's been, 8 years. Like, she's been the person, she's been the budget expert in the state legislature. And I think that's a valuable thing. I don't know if that means you are the best person.
Why is she such a poor candidate then? She like literally raised no money in the last quarter and has like a little.
And she was like the first person to announce too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. So one thing I'll say about Vinehout and Soglin is that I would try and find a use for them. So after the primary next week, neither of them are going to win. So whoever wins, I would seek out those two. I would pick their brains because you don't. First of all, you don't have to do anything that they say. You're the goddamn nominee, but. But they both have a lot of policy experience. I mean, Paul Soglin, say what you will about him. I know you have issues, but like, he's taught policy before. Like, he knows the way government works and does things, how money is used and spent. Like, I would just seek his opinion, you know, just.
Sure.
And maybe even find a role if they wanted to leave their current positions, which, like, I don't think Vinehout would. I don't. Soglin is leaving his current position. He's not running for re-election.
He's finally going to retire.
Awesome. Yeah, he announced that a week or two ago.
What? Oh my God!
So he announced that he's like, he wanted to announce it regardless of the results of the primary and the governor election, and because he wanted other people to be able to throw their hats in the ring now or as early as possible, which is cool of him. And my last thing I want to say about the governor's thing is. I'm impressed by this primary. I'm impressed by the number of good candidates. If you would have asked me 2 years ago, a year ago even, what the hell is Wisconsin going to do to take on Scott Walker? I would have been like, nothing. Just like, nothing's been done to take him on. Like, you know, stupid old Barrett and Burke. You know, just weak, boring... I don't even want to say establishment, because Mary Burke, I don't know, was she an establishment candidate? I mean, she's just some local rich woman.
Yeah.
They're just weak, weak candidates. I think there are multiple good choices in this primary, and it's refreshing. It makes me feel better about the, not even just the future of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, that's not at the forefront of my mind, but the future of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's not all doom and gloom and Republicans.
Right. There are some good candidates coming up.
Yeah. All right. So finish up with Wisconsin's first. Sure. I wish I would have done more research about some of the other House of Representative races, but I didn't.
One thing I'll say about the rest of them is that almost all of them have competition.
Like, yes.
Incumbents are almost all getting primaried, like Gwen Moore. Who, even though she's a Democrat, deserves to get primaried and lose her job for what she's done in office. But yeah, Glenn Grothman is Mequon. His candidate is maybe one of the weakest candidates I've seen on the Democrat side for these various House races. But I mean, as long as you run a halfway competent race, you should be able to make Glenn Grothman look stupid. I only regret that we haven't had the chance to properly profile all of the six candidates for Wisconsin's first district
on the Republican side. We made a decent effort at a few of them.
We did three.
Yeah.
I really want to profile this Jeremy Ryan guy as I'm looking at their mugshots.
Can I just say before we just... Sensenbrenner, very, very powerful congressman from Wisconsin, has a primary challenger. So, a physician from
Monopoly. Well, I mean, that's pretty... He's not nearly far right enough, I imagine, for the people he's representing.
You know what? I just found out something about Sensenbrenner yesterday that I did not know. A lot of the anti-immigrant shit going on in our country has some roots to a bill he proposed, known as the Sensenbrenner Bill, in 2006 or 7.
Wow.
And it was a very anti-immigrant, put it bluntly, bill that caused mad. Like, I don't remember these protests. I didn't really understand, you know, who knows what I was doing. but there were these massive Hispanic protests. It was like the national, there's a name for it, National Latino Workout or Work Blackout or something. Mm-hmm. These big protests in like 2006 or 7. And then that caused there to be kind of a little bit more progressive, even bipartisan of a bill that actually W was pushing for instead of the Sensenbrenner bill, but Bush had no political capital left, so Republicans didn't listen to him. And so anyway, neither bill got passed. But a lot of what started, and then that kind of led to, you know, Si Se Puede under Obama and all that, a lot of it actually comes back to Sensenbrenner. I did not know that. I just found that out yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Embarrassing Wisconsin.
Yep. A little nice Embarrassing Wisconsin History Edition. So in the Congressional 1st District, currently held by...
outgoing Speaker of the House, Speaker Paul of Ryan.
The
House,
yeah. The one of the most powerful politicians in the country. Huge war chests, which presumably are going to go behind the presumptive Republican nominee, Brian Stile.
Who we profiled on a previous episode.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. He has, from the Democratic Party, there's a primary between Randy Bryce, known as Iron Stash, and
Kathy Myers,
thank you, Meyer, who actually has been gaining a lot of ground. I would not be surprised if she won at this point. There's not great polling for congressional races, but the last poll I saw, she was behind by a few points.
Wow.
Where she started off way behind, both in funding and exposure.
I really wish Bernie hadn't come. I mean, I'm glad he came. I'm glad I went to that rally, but I really kind of wish he hadn't endorsed Randy Bryce. There, I said it.
You just, because you'd rather he endorsed the other one or just stayed out?
Just stayed out of the primary. Like, we have two good candidates, sort of.
Do you think he only did it because he assumed Bryce would win and he just wanted to get on early?
No, I mean...
What does he have against Meyer? Like, the only reason you'd endorse... To me, the only reason you'd endorse a primary is to either... Because you...
Well, I mean... Go ahead. I assume that they think that he's going to win, but I don't know why... If that is as sure of a thing as one would think.
Yeah. Yeah, I... It's confusing. It's an interesting race from... definitely getting like this huge politician to enter into a race right around the time, and I don't think it's because of Bernie, by the way, but Kathy Meyer was gaining ground. Some bad stories coming out about Iron Stash, which,
like, how many DUIs?
To me, it's not damning. Well, it's what? It's one DUI and then a bunch of arrests for not having a license stemming from the DUI and not showing up, or... What was it? Like, I don't think he lost the license because of the DUI. It's because he didn't, like, show up to court right away or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and child support problems.
Which, actually, I thought this was interesting. A couple weeks ago, Kathy Meyer was hitting him on that. And his ex-wife came out. She's like, I have no problem with that. He was going through a really tough time, had health problems. We worked it out as good parents do. Any shade coming from Meyer on that issue is I'm really uncomfortable with. She's trying to play up the woman's angle, which, more power to her on that.
She was also throwing unsubstantiated shade in the form of vague sexual harassment allegations, which weren't supported.
Yeah, so, I mean, neither of us vote in that election.
Unfortunately, we should, but...
and, well, not me. You should, yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, I have been uncomfortable with Meyer's campaign from the beginning. She has so much good. Like, she has good practical, like, blue-collar political experience that I think is any ground she's gaining is because of that. She put out a really good ad. It was kind of like one of Bryce's early ads, but whatever. It was good. You know, she's been out hitting, you know, boots on the ground, campaigning. She's going to Racine a lot. Like, she's doing a good job, but then she just throws the shade at Bryce, which I think is just so unfair and not the kind of politics people want.
Mm-hmm. Find the light in your policy differences. That's what the primary is for. Don't start tearing exactly. each other. Well, I mean, yeah, I you're just right. start tear each other down now so that we can get all this dirt out in the open, but...
Yeah, but even that, I would just let the journalists throw out whatever dirt they're throwing out. I don't think you need to take part in it.
Right? Don't throw, like, kindling on the fire.
Yeah, and I totally... To me, a primary, a party primary is about policy differences and figuring out what you want your party platform to be. Like, hey, even, you know, it doesn't get talked about much, and it didn't matter in the end that much, but, like, Bernie running for president and doing such a good job, it affected the party platform coming out of that convention.
Mm-hmm.
That was a more liberal party platform than it otherwise presumably would have been. And... Like, that should be all they really talk about. And the character assassination type is not only bad, I think just in general, I think a lot of people, it turns them off. But, yeah, it might win you some elections once in a while. But in a primary, I think it has very little place. I think it's dirty, and I'm not a fan.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm not endorsing anyone.
I'm not going to endorse anybody in this race. That's
no, I think they're both fine, and I think they both...
And I'm one of them, yeah.
And I don't want to critique Meyer too much. I've actually... I've long had some issues with Iron Stash, just in that I still maintain I don't think he's that on his feet, intellectually nimble.
No, she's definitely probably has him in that respect.
And I feel like he's going to, if he wins, and let's say he wins the general, while in office, he's going to have a flub or two. He's just going to be like, he's going to say something stupid on TV once in a while. I don't think that means he's stupid. I don't think it means his votes will be any more stupid. But I just think it's a bad look, and if all else was equal, well, I'd prefer the person who wasn't like that. But...
Yeah, I'd prefer the person who joins the Progressive Caucus.
Speaking of, I could see both of them doing that, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, he's being supported by the Working Families Party, and
yes,
probably aside, they're kind of to the left of the Democrats.
And she's, but I haven't picked up at all that she's.
Yeah, she's
less liberal than him.
Yeah, she's just trying to tack as far to the left as she can ahead of him, so I don't...
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, you want to talk about...
Jeremy Ryan. This the one... It's an interesting biography. Someone once said, quote, ask 100 people who Jeremy Ryan is, and you will get 100 different answers, end quote.
And 100 is how many votes he'll have.
This isn't because he's fake, but because he has so many different sides to him. He's a father of 2 boys and 3 dogs. He's a business person, having successfully built up multiple businesses in the Madison area.
Hmm.
Activist, taking part in mostly in constitutional rights issues. And then provides a Madison address.
Wait, he's running against Pocan?
Or... No, he's running in the 1st district. That's
really?
Part of the weirdness about it. So he's got to live like... I guess probably somewhere within commuting distance to Madison, but in the 1st district.
Hmm. I don't like people who say that they're the parents of their pets.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
You're just like, maybe we need a new word for that.
I mean, they couldn't find a better picture of him. It's him standing in front of a mirror with his taking a phone selfie.
Oh my god, what is this on?
All right, this is on WisconsinVote.org. I guess here, let me go to his campaign website.
Oh no, you don't want to see those pictures.
Oh man, the first thing that you see when you open it is a video whose flash screen is a weed leaf on underneath a judge's gavel.
This, and he's running on the Republican primary.
Yeah.
I think I heard about this guy, and he's like actually a liberal who's running as a Republican, and I don't remember the exact logic behind it. I think he might be one of the people who's been a protester before in Madison.
I can see why, based on the things that I'm reading here, he sounds
what are his like businesses?
A liberal version of a Republican.
I want to know what these businesses are.
Me too. And tell me more about this Right Ooh. Ryan.
TheRightRyan.com. Ooh.
Right?
Clever. I like it.
There's a picture. Let's see. There's two pictures of him.
Oh, he's the guy in the Segway?
Oh, did you see his giant puppy?
I don't know.
This is the best. Is this the best picture? No. His fucking cancer shirt picture would have been better than the one that they used. I guess that has an inappropriate wording, so. Yeah. It's you probably don't want to use the one of him hitting a bong, or the one with him with the bong in his hand, or drinking, or with his dogs, or Instagramming.
So is Nalen on the ballot?
Nalen is absolutely on the ballot, right?
So who do you think gets more votes, Nalen or that guy?
This guy.
You think?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I believe that guy would get more votes than Paul Nalen, but Paul Nalen is probably going to get more votes than that guy, and he's probably going to get more votes than anybody but Brian Stile if he doesn't win the election, because we're in the darkest timeline and we have to assume the worst.
Yeah. I don't expect Nalen will get many votes. I expect him to get trounced, but it is interesting to think, but is he going to be, because there's what, five people? How many did you
Six.
Say? Six. I mean, so, you know, but is he going to be second? Is he going to be a not trounced second? It's possible. I
mean, the thing is, okay, so the swing voters, of course, are key in any election. And that means getting the people who don't vote to come out and vote. And I could see, you know, white supremacists and, you know, other forms of racists being the Republican swing vote, because most of the time they don't have a dog in the fight, so to speak. Like nobody's outwardly saying, hey, let's go, I don't know, round people up based on their ethnicity and deny the Holocaust or something. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
But the fact that somebody is saying it will draw those people, the swing voters, out of the woodwork.
So I know there are people like that in Racine.
I mean, Janesville, they had that one rally, the KKK rally, where Geraldo broke his nose.
Yeah. I feel as, but specifically talking about the sort of non-voting racists, I would think it'd be very hard to campaign for any election besides president to those people. Because, like, I picture those people not reading any news. Not even reading Breitbart, really. Because, like, the people who would, like, open up their computer and read Breitbart are voters. Right?
Probably.
And but the people who are racist but not voting, who presumably, like, I think it's an established thing that Trump got out a fair number of those people, right?
Sure.
But Trump had the, you know, like, it was like a cultural phenomenon type election. Like, you couldn't avoid his presence and his rhetoric. And even if you weren't hearing him talk about, like, it's almost like he got more, like, liberals got more racists to come out to vote for him by them saying how racist he is. And then, like, there'd be some, like, you know, some racist who's sitting in, like, the coffee shop or the bar and, like, overhears some liberals saying how racist Donald Trump is. And they're like, oh, this Donald Trump, ooh, I might actually vote.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I picture that happened. And I just don't think, I don't know how you campaign without much money on a grassroots level.
As a racist.
As a like, very outward racist.
Like, not even Uline will support this guy, probably.
Yeah, it's like, because you're not going to the city, like, of Racine, and maybe Janesville a little bit, but not, like, you're not doing that in Racine. I'm telling you that.
Maybe Lake Geneva, but certainly not Racine or Kenosha.
So you're either in the burbs or the rural areas, which means there's a lot of space. You can't just walk around the neighborhood. You have to use cars, vehicles. It takes time. It takes money.
Well, there aren't that many people out there either, which is a real problem.
Well, I mean, take Racine. Like, again, I don't know exactly this whole district, like, the back of my hand, but I know Racine. Racine has 90,000 in the city, give or take. and there's like 40,000 in the suburbs. So not even talking about like west of the eye, which is like the farmland with some little cities, Union Grove, Burlington. And so like, there's a lot of people in the suburbs. Like that's where I'm from. And most of my family's from, or actually the suburb of Racine outside. And like, there's definitely racists out there, but like, you have to put in so much energy talking to so many people who aren't racist. And that's assuming that the racist, like, misanthropic, misogynist dude with a Confederate flag on the back of his truck is even going to answer the door and step away from whatever fucking... I'm not trying to associate all video games with racists, but come on. He's probably playing a video game.
I mean, he's probably smoking meth.
Yeah, or he's, like, way out on the land, you know, like, just shooting at fucking... like squirrels or something.
Hey, let's not besmirch or malign video gaming. People of any political stripe can enjoy video games.
I'm just saying that I think a lot of racist men play video games. I'm not saying that's not saying that's a causation anywhere or anything like that. I'm just saying I think there's a very strong. You know, you're probably right. It is like, I mean, video games are fun. So like anyone. It's like racist people like fun things, right?
Right, they have to. They're people too, right? I mean, maybe not Nazis, but
yeah, I mean,
like people.
But you know, if you're racist, that kind of shrinks like your social pool. So right. Yeah, I mean, you're just going to be a little bit more alone time, and like it's probably easy to find. I mean, Nazis. Isn't that where a lot of like this white supremacist recruiting is going on? Is on like
online?
Yeah, it's like video game.
Guilds and things like that.
Yeah, like that's it's fucked up, but
I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah,
it that's is. How the kids these days, you know, network.
Yeah.
Before it was the punk shows and
yeah,
it's the video game.
Yeah, well, the problem is that at the punk shows, like the other punk show next door could be like, "Hey, did you hear there's a bunch of skinheads next door?" Or like vice versa. He's like, "Hey, did you hear that there's a bunch of like liberal punks over there?" I don't know what they called them. And then they'd like, you know, get into like a you know, a fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then like the skinheads would often be outnumbered and beaten up. But, like, how do you do that online? Like, the best you can do is like virtually beat them up, but
yeah,
you just go on a different server or something, right? I mean,
yeah, typically. Or if it's your server, you just kick them off, which is what I've done in the past.
Sure, yeah.
Like, oh, you're a racist? Well, bye. Easy. It's like, oh, you're flying a swastika. Well, I put you on the ban list.
Yeah. Oh, that's messed up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think I'm good on Wisconsin primaries.
Okay.
And, oh, let me just, I had updates on, we'll end the segment. Because this will be, like, super out of date, and I can just cut it at the end if it's out of date by the time I edit this. The Republican has pulled ahead with 99% precincts fully reporting by 0.8%, just under 1,700 votes.
That's close. But
that still means Cincinnati. That still means... So this is not Cincinnati. This is outside of Columbus.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Columbus is left, but everything around it is the countryside.
Yeah,
is
kind of, yeah, and so there's a map on New York Times. Like, if you just look this up, New York Times is doing, like, a live update thing. But they show a map of the precincts, and there's, like, the suburban thing on, like, the north side of Columbus. Just, like, straight up blue. The fact that it even has a breakdown here. They voted about 2-1 for the Democrat.
Hmm.
And everything else is red. It just goes into these rural counties sprawling north and east. And they all voted Republican. However, so like the biggest one, it was maybe kind of doing the math in my head here, but like, ooh, 55-45.
I mean, that's one good, of the, not exactly a landslide.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of these are 2-1 for, like, really small. Like, Marion County here is 1,200 for the Republican, 500 for the Democrat. But they're really small, right? And so, I don't know. I have to add all these up, but it kind of seems to me like that's... You know, because the Democrat here looks like he will have outpaced Hillary by 10 percentage points. 10 or 11.
That's pretty good.
So, and that's on the low end of how these special elections have gone. So now Trump is going to tweet about this and be like, see, there's no blue wave, but it's like...
It's a red wave.
Yeah, but it's like, the dude still underperformed.
Yeah.
Theoretically, what he should be doing by 10 points. Like, this shouldn't have been a close match.
Mm-mm.
Close match. See, I'm falling into the sports lingo. All right. Well, let's have closing thoughts. I don't think we have much to talk about, so we'll do that quick. All right, and we are back with closing thoughts. I want to just talk quick about Alex Jones, who's made news this week for not being allowed onto Apple platforms, Google, Facebook, Spotify, which I think is owned by Facebook. I'm not really sure. And not notably Twitter and Periscope. But what I found interesting, first of all, is like I don't buy the First Amendment thing. I don't at all because it's like a private company that has. I don't have to put you on there so that you can make money.
Right, they're not a communications utility.
You know, I mean, if we want to make them a utility, then that's a separate kind of like debate. But until that happens, they're just big companies that, yeah, we have to worry about them. Like, I do think censorship is a concern, but it's not, you don't have a right to it. It's just something that, as users, you kind of have to be vocal about what you want. And hopefully the people that are being, like, I don't feel bad for him being a conspiracy theorist and racist. And what I found interesting is that all these companies did it just like that. Bum, 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 bum.
Mm-hmm. Like it was coordinated or something.
Yeah, or like they just needed one to be okay with it. Yeah, I don't know if they were waiting for Apple to do it first, because I believe they are the ones that did it first.
Was the federal government or any other elected representative somehow involved in, like, you know, behind the scenes pressure? Or perhaps a lobbying group?
Yeah, the coordinated aspect of it is more what makes me...
It's fertile ground for conspiracy theories.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, who knows what he's saying on the show right now about it.
He was losing his shit.
Oh, well, but he always is, so, yeah, you know. Well. Boy who cried wolf on that one, huh?
Yeah.
I don't even know that I have, like, a hot take about necessarily some sort of slippery slope or... It just strikes me as unusual that all of a sudden, when this is easily so that's something that could have been done a decade ago.
When you first started that Sandy Hook nonsense. Yeah,
that would have probably been.
That should have been enough, right?
You'd think. And so, now obviously they've been feeling the heat.
My problem with this is that he's not even the lowest hanging fruit. There are, like, the Proud Boys, the Patriot Prayer assholes. A lot of them still have their shit on Facebook. And, like, you know, the people who support those groups are still have platforms that nobody is trying to take, you know, their access away from them, even though they're belligerent and at times violent, you know, racists and fascists. At any rate, so a lot of people think they're worth protesting.
Yeah. I don't know that they were going for lowest hanging fruit, though. I mean, I think it's almost the opposite.
That's what I'm saying. It's weird that, you know, there are worse groups out there that still have access, but Alex fucking Jones, who's a nitwit who testified in court that he's just an entertainer and is doing it purely for entertainment value...
Yeah. I mean, I think it's because he's the biggest, though. I mean, I almost wonder, though, if it's So like are they going like cutting off the head of this, not that they're coordinated all these disparate groups, but are they cutting off the head to like send a message that, hey, if we did it to him, we're going to do it to you and you and you, to like the groups you're speaking of? Or are they doing this and then just like, okay, we're done here, let's go on. Let's go on with our business of making truckloads of money.
I suspect the latter.
Yeah. Because I didn't hear about anyone else, really. Nope. Not.
Well, they've deplatformed the, Facebook specifically, closed the group that was trying to organize the counter-protest to the Unite the Right 2 rally in D.C. in a similar way, so...
Yeah, so wait, but did they do that to the counter-protest or a counter-protest?
I think it was the counter-protest organized by local activists.
Because the story I had read, that was part of what we talked about
a week or two ago.
What was that?
I've heard that, like, I know, like, there were reports that it was part of some kind of weird misinformation campaign, and that it was a sock puppet group, but more credible reports I heard said that it was, you know, people from the area who were trying to organize a legitimate counter-protest.
I think both can be true, can't they? And I don't know what you do about it from Facebook's perspective. But, like, it could have been... The group itself could have been started, or maybe a bunch of invites were sent out or something like that by some sort of fake account at, you know, one of these unusual foreign activity accounts or whatever they were talking about. But the actual people doing most of the actual work are genuine people who don't like fascists, like we've seen in other cities around the country.
Hmm.
Like, it clearly, these anti-white supremacist rallies that occur when there are white supremacist rallies aren't, are genuine.
Yeah, ask people in Portland about how genuine they are.
Wait, which one?
The counter-protesters.
Yeah. And so... But that doesn't mean it... Well, and that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, can one of those people just start a new group and just do their counter-protest anyway? Like they don't have to... I don't know. Like, if they got it taken down again... And it's like, no, I am just this person that's like in D.C. I'm just a person from D.C. Well, yeah, and it happened. I don't know.
Think of all the time lost having to like restart it up again. It's, yeah.
That, oh, could... I know. It's,
there's no easy solution to this, unfortunately.
I mean, it should be fairly easy to, for like, if the person who started the group is a real person, shouldn't they just? I mean, that's who was quoted in the story? Like, that should be pretty easy to prove.
Right.
Although, I don't know if this is, like, tied in with... so much seediness in this world. Like, it's so much, like, with this whole, like, internet computer, the accounts, the avatars, the information warfare, the spycraft, it's just, like...
Zuckerberg space.
It's like, how do you trust anything? And then it's getting us all to, like, not trust each other. And...
That is still you out there, right, Pete?
Oh, God. I don't know. Have I been changed? Who am I? You know that once every 28 days, all of the cells in your body make you into a physically different person. I read that online. I don't even know if that's true.
Speaking of completely different from what we were before, the United States has announced they're going to put secondary sanctions on countries that that continue to do business with Iran after the sanctions that we just reimposed.
Mm-hmm.
Which is new, because even up to this point, even in the worst days of the Cold War, we didn't, like, you know, sanction the countries that did business with, like, Cuba or North Korea. I mean, we still don't for very good reasons.
I'm not sure that's totally true what you just said. But effectively true. Well, go ahead.
No, we do. We put specific sanctions on, like, certain Chinese companies that help North Korea evade sanctions. But we don't put sanctions on, like, countries and, like, whole sectors in countries because, yeah.
So
business with another country.
That's what I'm saying.
These are broader sanctions. Like, these aren't targeted counter sanctions. They're, yeah. They would seem to be broader attempts to break the political will of opposition, I guess. I don't know. It's weird. It's way more belligerent than any other president has been up to this point.
So the way I understand these, what's going on with what Europe's doing, is that they actually used to do these. These, what were they called again?
Secondary sanctions.
Well, no, but what Europe's response is called. I don't have the article up. I'm lost.
But retaliatory measures?
That wasn't the word they used on the... What was that? Anyway, whatever it is. I'm going to find it as soon as I'm done talking about it. So what it is that, yes, so America sanctions Iran, right, because we're breaking the JCPOA, and that means that if you do business with Iran, you are supposed to be, at least under these broad kinds, sanctioned as well, because you're doing business with the person that is sanctioned. And so I guess what they're doing is this thing that they used to do in Europe when there were... sanctions. I don't know which. I don't know if they were specifically like USSR or Cuba. I don't know what they were for at the time, offhand. But they would the country would essentially say, "No company in Germany, in France, in Italy, you can go ahead and do this business, and we will kind of protect you, vouch for you, we'll take care of it now
and cover your losses."
Yes, and cover your losses. And now that's fairly, theoretically, that could be very confrontational to the original sanction setter, in this case, the U.S. However, I guess what happened is, I think this was the 80s, might have been 90s, but I think it was the 80s, essentially the government, the U.S. government was like, nah, that's fine. Like, that's okay. Like, they didn't push it further.
Yeah, Reagan. Not even Reagan would push it further. Yeah,
but we don't know that that's what's going to happen here.
That's almost certainly going to happen. Like, Bolton is, like, tacking on, aggressive statements on just threats, so...
Yeah, and... I mean, he... Like, that. If that's how you follow it up, it's like, okay, well, the U.S. is probably not going to drop this. And is going to make a thing of it and use it as a... further wedge between them and Europe.
Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah. We're losing allies left and right. Pretty soon, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is going to be the only ally that we have left.
Is it... How does... How does leaving the JCPOA... affect Russia? What would Russia view that as? Can't remember if we've talked about this.
I mean, Iran, Russia isn't as close to Iran as they are to other satellite states and other clan states. Like, Syria is much more useful. Iran is just a market and in some ways a competitor because they're both trying to sell oil.
So,
But that's why Netanyahu was in Russia for victory.
Yeah.
To help split Iran off from the Russia-Iran-Syria alliance. Like, to make sure, we're going to bomb Iran. Is that cool with you? And he's like, yeah, it's cool with me, whatever.
And so then it might benefit that new alignment if then the U.S. pulls away from... its traditional allies in that pact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, we could see a new U.S.-Russia-Israel alliance forming up if, you know, America gets too isolated.
Well, is that like that crazy... I saw some crazy map online. Oh, I can't remember what that was from. But it was like New World Order. I mean, it didn't say... It didn't use that term, New World Order. But it was kind of like hinting at like a New World Order type thing. Mm-hmm. And it had some sort of like changing of the map between like... Kind of like the like a democracy, westernized sort of countries of the world. Not necessarily the West, though. But then it like changed it into like this different one. And it was like, I had noticed that like America and Russia became the same color on this map. And I can't remember who was sending that around. And or where they dug it up. But it was like, I don't know.
I mean, there are some similarities between the United States and Russia.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, demographically. We both kind of had that huge Cold War boom that we're slowly getting over, or not.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that... That's a bigger thing in Russia.
Yeah,
the, the demographic change, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you know, they're way more white than us, but yeah, I mean, predominantly white. I mean, that's kind of why a lot of these conservatives are attracted to them, isn't it? I mean, some of the people on the far fringes, that's the explicit reason why they're attracted to them.
Right, and they really are not friendly with immigrants.
You'd think that they would be.
Well, yeah, you would think that they would be, just because even more than America, they need people.
Yeah.
And some of, I guess they would also need the, not credibility or legitimacy, but, you know, the cultural appeal of a place that people are known to emigrate to.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I heard of a cousin. He emigrated to probably not Russia, more likely America.
Well, yeah. Is it just like... Are they how can I put this? So they don't allow the immigrants in for cultural reasons, or is it like a sort of almost like protectionist economic reason?
It's more of a xenophobic protectionist thing, because they assimilated a lot of people from the Donbas region in Ukraine. Like, they emptied out, like, whole villages and, you know, basically distributed the people throughout Russia.
Hmm. I mean, my understanding of Russian history, I'm no expert, but it's fairly... I mean, they had an empire for decades that was pretty multicultural.
Centuries.
And they still have these, many of these peoples in their sort of orbit still.
Sure. I mean, Russia's been welcoming at times for being a multi-ethnic state, but at other times is not, depending on who runs.
Yeah, I guess like anyone else, right?
Yeah. I mean, Putin's notionally not that terrible to the multi-ethnic people already in Russia, but again, it's the immigrants, people from outside of Russia.
Mm, yeah.
Like, he's perfectly buddy-buddy with that guy in Chechnya. Who's Muslim.
Yeah, but isn't that like... He's more like the exception. But, no, I guess an exception is still an exception.
Hmm. Yeah, that guy's actually pretty close to Putin, so he's kind of the power part of the power base, too.
But he's not... I mean, that's unusual. I mean... There's been a lot of Islamophobic rhetoric coming out of Moscow over the past decade, right? Because they've kind of gotten in on this war on terror thing, and they, you know, they're not as like they didn't have a big debate in their country. Like,
they invaded Afghanistan first back in the '70s.
Mm. Well, yeah, I suppose like they were the hipsters in this war on terror, but like they. They didn't have a big debate there on, like, using the term like what's Islamic extremism like here, like where like the president wouldn't say it, even though he like technically did say it a few times, but like people on Fox News are like claiming Obama would never say that term. Why don't you just call it what it is, you know?
Radical Islamic extremism.
Yeah, like they don't mince words like that there, is the impression I get.
Yeah, they're probably way more general about their labels.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm still not afraid of Russia. Nothing I've seen here convinced me that there's any reason that we should be.
Well, I mean, I still disagree with you, but that's not why I brought Russia up in terms of Iran. It had nothing to do with that. I'm just kind of curious, like, it's like, you know, Russia seems intent on, or at least is happy with the U.S. And Trump, you know, causing friction in the EU, NATO, etc. And it seems like even though this isn't like a huge multinational thing with Iran, it was, you know, some of the big powers getting together, working together, and doing this thing. And it just seems like another thing that Trump is breaking. And on the surface, to like, if you don't think layers into it, it seems counterintuitive because, you know, Russia and Iran are kind of allies. And so if Russia's getting hurt by, or sorry, Iran's getting hurt by these sanctions, wouldn't Russia not like that? But I think your points suffice to explain that.
Yeah, they don't really care that much.
All right, so anything to look forward to besides we'll be recording on the primary election day next week, and anything between now and then?
Look for more Brexit news. That's going to be shaping up as the as time goes on.
Okay.
Let's see. My worry right now is the yield curve inverting and the economy signaling more recession or giving off more recessionary signals than it is already.
Yeah, there was a big story I read probably a week ago, but it was like, I don't know, CNBC, Bloomberg, something like that. Mm-hmm. That was like, it was like Merrill Lynch saying the economy is going to crash. Like, it was pretty blunt. It wasn't that blunt, but it was, pretty blunt.
A good financial analyst was like, yeah, there are some real problems right now, and it's not looking like it's going to get better.
And I was just reading something yesterday from, they were talking about this metric that Warren Buffett likes, where you take, it's like total investment divided by GDP or something like that. And you get a ratio, and if it's above one, you expect retraction towards one, and if it's below one, well, there goes the screecher guy back again. He heard we're recording, made it in just in time. And if it's below one, you expect some growth.
Mm.
And we are at now like the highest number ever in like 50 years or something like that.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, these stock buybacks are crippling our economy. This rapid continued consolidation is, yeah. It's going to break at some point. It's going to come out of the problems with corporate debt and other financial holdings.
Is there anything... Okay, let's leave it on one, because this might be a good, like... We're going into some elections here. If you were consulting a major, let's say, senatorial candidate, and they were asked, they knew they were going to be asked because, you know, Democrats always share their questions, debate questions with candidates, right? And it's something along the lines of, what would be the first thing you would do if you were elected to the Senate or reelected to the Senate to maintain, to sustain growth in the economy and protect against future recessions or something like that?
We need a hearty anti-monopolization, like basically a more competitive economy.
Mm.
We need smaller, more nimble companies. We need less decision making and like hands of very, very few people.
I'm sorry. I asked for one thing.
I'm sorry. Was that not the one thing?
I meant, yeah, no, that's a good answer. I'm just messing with you. No, that's good. I was looking from you more what I was asking for, but you actually asked it like a, answered it like a politician would, so that was clever of you. I was thinking more like what is something realistic that the Senate could at least try to pass? I mean, yeah, good luck getting the president to sign it or whatever. But like, let's say there is a more liberal legislature come January. The market is slowing down, but it hasn't fallen off a cliff. What are some things that they could do right then and be like, hey, let's try and pass this bill just to something? Like, what do you do
short-term? Goose the economy?
What was that?
To goose an economy from a legislative power base? Yeah, there's very little you do. Yeah. That's why you have to like change laws in kind of drastic ways that could have short-term ramifications.
It's like there's not a It's kind of scary.
It is actually. I mean, that's why people rely on the executive and its you know, magic wand like powers at times.
Well, it's kind of like you put this power in the executive because you hope that they can have the flexibility and power to handle any type of crisis, really. But, you know.
But a specific situation rather than something that requires a new rule.
Yeah. Yes, to respond to, like, current situations and facts. Not so much, yes, to create a new rule of law or amend the Constitution. But it's kind of scary if, like, you know that the person in charge is going to fuck up.
Mm-hmm. Really, I wouldn't trust this guy driving home from a bar.
Well, I mean, he doesn't drink, so.
I mean, does he drive?
He probably doesn't drive. I've never had a drink and driven. It's because I don't drink and I don't drive. I don't drink and drive. I don't drink or drive and or drive. Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess this is a lot like Bush, right? I mean, he was a less than capable executive who was having bad warning signs in the economy, and, you know, he may have had a person or two in his administration that was helping, probably some that were hurting.
Well, I mean, the same thing that happened under Bush is happening in some cases on steroids right now. The thing that really did us in was that there was no white-collar criminal enforcement at the federal level. Yeah. And, like, apparently in the southwest region of our country, literally the only thing that they are doing are immigration cases.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting into bad news. I was trying to end with good news.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, I remember I had a topic that we never talked about a few weeks ago. This is reminding me of it. And it was... Should I care more about the attorney general's race in my state than the governor's race?
In some cases, yes.
Now, we can only, on the national level, of course, you can only kind of indirectly affect the attorney general, you know, by president or by voting for senators who confirm or don't, you know.
Yelling in staffers' ears or into voice recorders is necessary.
But the two issues that I think are... they might be my number one and two issue in all of politics and all of elections. And that is criminal justice reform in terms of race and white collar crime.
Hmm.
They might be the two biggest things. And those are so intricately tied in with attorney general's office, U.S. attorney's office, you know, national attorney general, state, what, you know, even DAs in certain instances, I'm sure.
And especially city DAs. They have huge power.
Like, yeah.
John Oliver said, this past week. I don't know if you saw it, but he had a whole big segment about how important prosecutors are.
Oh, that's interesting. I know that the singer John Legend is actually part of a campaign that is promoting average people to learn more about their DAs. I don't know of all the random things I know. I barely actually know who John Legend is, but I know that about him. I probably can't even name a song by John Legend, but I know that about him. So maybe that's a good thing. But I don't know. I would love to. I think the white collar thing, though, is going to require law changes, even though there are obviously many laws on the books.
It's just a matter of enforcement. Prosecutors make the law by deciding who to charge.
I know.
The laws are on the books. The evidence is out there. I mean, and to bring it back to, like, the stuff that Wilbur Ross is doing, like, those people who are, like, making these insane management fees and, like, bilking their customers could very easily be hemmed up by attorneys general in various, you know, jurisdictions.
Okay, let me amend my thing. I still think it requires legislature activity, whether at the state or national level.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not law changes, but budgeting.
Yeah, there you go.
I think that's what it is then. Like, they have to be like, hey, DOJ, here's a pile of money. We're going to have oversight over it. You need to spend it on these two things.
Right, spend it on white criminal or white collar crime enforcement.
Well, I mean, what supposedly happened after 2008 is they were so scared. You know, fear is so toxic to politics. You know, after 9/11, that kind of fear of terrorism, fear of financial collapse. But the fear of ruining the economy more by imprisoning bankers.
Which makes no sense to me, right?
Well, I think it's not just by, it's not, I think it's also because they're worried about seizing assets of the banks and having that affect markets. It's like supposedly, I don't know, I hear this quote brought up a lot, but I don't know, which makes me not trust it, actually. You know, it's like that weird thing, the more you hear it, the less you're like, I don't know if that's real. But supposedly there have been actual conversations had by, like, New York, I think I heard this about New York, like New York State, like regulators or whatever, about the New York City, because this is about, I heard this in terms of Trump, like, if they actually went hard after money laundering, it would collapse the real estate market in New York. Because there's so much.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know. I don't think that's a good concern, and it's probably being overblown when it comes to what they dealt with after 2008. I mean, they obviously overblew it because they didn't prosecute anyone.
Right. And
it's like, you could do someone, if not all, like, of them.
And it shows the problem wasn't solved, because a few years later, there was the huge robo-signing scandal, which is a continuation of the same problem.
Yes. And, man, I mean, I don't know. Okay, so I'm just going to end on a bad note here. So it seems like what's going to happen is the economy's going to collapse in the next year or so. And people are going to be all upset. They're going to vote Trump out of office, put a bunch of Democrats in, and then the Democrats are going to be like, just make the same exact mistakes again.
Probably.
Like, maybe some of the same successes again, too, by the way. Like, maybe they'll do a stronger, like, one that you can't fuck with, CFP. Or Consumer Protection. Consumer Finance Protection, CFPB, there we go. Like, maybe do that better, or, like, revitalize it or something.
Well, it was renamed.
Oh, shit, yeah, it was. Is it CPFB?
No, it's the BCFB.
BCFB. I'm never going to remember that. Oh, yeah, it has Bureau in the beginning now. Yeah. It's such a weird change.
Yeah, it's an asshole change on the part of Michael Rooney.
All right, well, this has been Tell Me What to Think. Use the hashtag TMWTT on Twitter. Tweet me at Bloated Nemesis, Charles at @green_weird, which is WYRD. Email us at TMWTTPOD@gmail.com. Find us on Google, Apple, Stitcher, other places, a few podcast addicts. I was trying to think of.
And if you want back episodes, go to stoneduckmedia.com.
All right. Everyone, thank you for listening. Go out and vote. And you can early vote. Like, they have the voting signs out at the libraries here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like every time I drive up, I'm like, wait, is there election today? Oh, wait, no, it's just early voting. Forget.
You're waiting until the last minute?
But it essentially means you can have... I like the ritual of voting on election day. I mean, if I had other things to do, I would vote early, but I don't. So.
Alright, well, that seems like a good note.
Alright, see y'all later. Bye. Later, Charles. Today's sunny, today's rain. Destroy the myth and we'll break our chains. Break your chains!